Another very interesting point that emerged from my discussions with Paul Ekman is the distinction between emotions on the one hand and moods and traits on the other. Emotions are seen as instantaneous, whereas moods may last longer, even for a whole day, and traits are longer lasting still, sometimes carried for a lifetime. Joy and sadness, for example, would be emotions, which often arise out of a particular stimulus, while happiness and unhappiness would be moods, whose direct causes might not be so easy to identify. Similarly, fear is an emotion, but anxiety is its corresponding mood. While an individual may possess a high propensity for being anxious, which would be a trait of character. Although Buddhist psychology makes no formal distinction between moods and emotions, it recognizes the differences between mental states, both instantaneous and enduring, and the underlying propensities towards them. The ideas that particular emotions may arise from a certain natural propensity, that specific emotions may give rise to certain kinds of behavior, and in particular, the assumption that positive emotions are more amenable to thought processes are critical for Buddhist contemplative practice. Key practices such as the cultivation of compassion and loving kindness, or the overcoming of destructive emotions such as anger and hatred, are rooted in and dependent upon the insights of psychology. A crucial aspect of these practices is a minute analysis of the causal dynamics of specific mental processes, their external conditions, preceding and attendant internal mental states, and relationship to other cognitive and emotional events. On a number of occasions, I've had discussions with psychologists and psychoanalysts in a wide area of therapeutic disciplines, and I have noticed a parallel interest in the causality of emotions. Insofar as these disciplines of applied psychology are concerned with the alleviation of suffering, I think that they share a fundamental goal with Buddhism. The primary purpose of Buddhist contemplative practice is to alleviate suffering. Science, as we have seen, has contributed greatly to the lessening of suffering, particularly in the physical realm. This is a wonderful pursuit that I hope we will all continue to benefit from. But as science advances further, there is more at stake. Science's power to affect the environment, indeed to change the course of the human species as a whole, has grown great. As a result, for the first time in history, our very survival demands that we begin to consider ethical responsibility, not just in the application of science, but in the direction of research and development of new realities and technology as well. It is one thing to use the study of neurobiology, psychology, and even Buddhist theory of mind to try to become happier, to change our minds through deliberate cultivation of positive states of mind. But when we begin manipulating genetic codes, both of ourselves and of the natural world in which we live, how much is too much? This is a question that must be considered by scientists as well as the public at large.